The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Good morning and welcome to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. Also listening to us on 88.1 WSBR in Lee, Lennox, and Stockbridge. Watching us perhaps on the PCTV Select app that's free to download, or watching us on cable channel 1301. Sean Sayer here with you this morning. It's Thursday, June 18th, and waking up to a wet and cloudy morning, hearing some sun breaking out, but then also some showers a little later today, maybe some thunderstorms on the way. But we could use some of that rain for sure. Things are getting a little brown out there, so we like to see a little rain in the forecast. Sarah Mule is my guest here this morning. She is a member of the Pittsfield Public School Committee, and we're going to be talking about the schools and about middle school reorganization and Morningside School and all kinds of other big things that are happening for the Pittsfield Public Schools and their students and families and teachers. So lots to talk about with Sarah coming up in just a moment. First, let's get the weather forecast done and find out what the National Weather Service has in store for us today. Here we go. Berkshire
Weather. WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Rest of tonight, cloudy with a 40% chance of showers. Night is cool. Near steady temperature around 60. South wind 5 to 10 miles per hour with gusts up to 30 miles per hour. Thursday, showers in the morning, then showers likely with a chance of thunderstorms in the afternoon. Some thunderstorms may be severe with damaging wind in the afternoon. Highs in the upper 70s. South wind 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts up to 45 miles per hour. Chance of rain near 100%. Thursday night, partly cloudy. A chance of showers in the evening. Lows in the mid-50s. West wind 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts up to 35 miles per hour. Chance of rain 50%. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
Okay, sounds like we're also going to be seeing some winds come through. I heard 45-mile-an-hour gusts, so that will be something. Keep an eye out for that. Always worry about trees and branches and things, so you know, keep an eye out if you're going to get a thunderstorm with some wind. That is something to keep an eye out for. All right, Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, and good morning, Sarah Mule. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. My pleasure. I'm glad you could be here for us today and to talk about the schools and school committee. Before we get started, I think this is the first time you've been on since the election.
Yes.
Which was, it seems like a lifetime ago.
Yes, it does.
But here we are in June. Tell us a little bit about yourself, a little bit of your background.
Sure. So I'm an early educator and I'm a director of a program in Stockbridge, Massachusetts, called the Austin Riggs Nursery School. We actually just had our end of the year celebration yesterday, So we'll start our summer program on June 29th. So yeah, that's been my entire life is early education. Mm. So I love children and working with families, and you know, just it's been an amazing journey, and I enjoy the impact that I can see that happens for children and families.
Yeah, we are at that time of the year, isn't it? The transition time.
That's when right.
Kids are finding that end of the school year, and you're transitioning into the summer programs and things like that.
Yeah.
Tell me what sort of motivated you to run for school committee and what you hoped that you could accomplish and contribute on that board.
Yeah, so my original motivation, and it, you know, still is my motivation that I started with, was about the middle school restructuring. Mm. So I was part of that committee, and I really enjoyed working with all of the educators and administration and community members that joined that group of people to really think deeply about what's happening in our middle schools and why we have families that transfer out of our district, especially during that critical time.
Yeah, and how people probably don't know, you know, when the news headlines come that the schools are going to change and that sort of the rubber hits the road, if you will, they don't think that there was actually a long process involved in creating this, thinking it through, figuring out whether that was going to work as a good idea or not. How long was that process?
Oh, my gosh. Months long. I was close to a year, I would think, if I could remember it correctly. But, yeah, it was a months long initiative that we took up, obviously, with the previous superintendent. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I really think that it started off with some really incredible intention. And I think that we've gotten to a place where I'm very hopeful that Dr. Phillips will take us forward mm-hmm. in a really positive way. And I think, you know, we have educators and families that are really on board with all of this. Mm-hmm. And I would love to see the community on board with this. I know there's many community members who also think this is a good idea. It's, you know, it's a difficult decision to make when you are looking at things like this from an outside perspective. Mm-hmm. But to really understand what the work was that went into this and understand where the educators and administrators were coming from in discussing these initiatives mm-hmm. with us. But really, we sat for hours, mm-hmm. hours long meetings where we talked about what should this look like? Yeah. What kind of education do we really want to provide for these students? And what makes the most sense?
What were some of the factors involved when you had those discussions? What kinds of things came up? Was it, you know, because I'm sure there was a pro and a con to everything. It wasn't just sort of a slam dunk that, yes, we definitely have to change this whole plan so that all students in the district, you know, 5 and 6 go to one building, 7 and 8 go to another building after having, what, probably almost 40 years of middle or maybe more of middle school organization. So what were some of the factors that were brought in by people?
Yeah, I think one of the largest factors, obviously, is equity across our city. You know, we have 8 elementary schools currently, mm-hmm. and those are obviously in pocketed neighborhoods that really speaks to, you know, kids being able to walk to school and,
you know, an outgrowth of the neighborhood school
concept.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And so, but I think that in that, excuse me, what ended up happening was there were issues with equity mm-hmm. in that sense where, you know, those schools, every school got this equal amount of money to, you know, do their jobs. Mm-hmm. And but the amount of children in those pocketed neighborhoods grew depending on where they were. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there were children that there were a lot larger classrooms in some of the schools than in others. You know, there are low income areas in the city of Pittsfield, as we know. Yep. And so those areas had larger numbers of families in them and larger numbers of children going to those schools. So really looking at that and also understanding that 8 elementary schools going into 2 middle schools. Mm-hmm. Right. And so,
and those are districted, right? So you'd have mm-hmm. one half of the city by geography
right.
going to one middle school and the other half going to the
exactly.
other.
Exactly. Yeah. So we really wanted to take a deeper look at that and understand, you know, what goes into that and what kind of preparation for educators, what kind of preparation for families goes into all of that, and really look at the education that the children were receiving mm-hmm. and knowing that the data was showing us that children coming from some of the schools were not quite as ready as children coming from other schools. Mm-hmm. So I think that that was a big factor too, just knowing like what's going into the 6th grade year for those kids mm-hmm. who are all coming in from different 5th grades. And they're coming in and they may not all have the same education as each other, you know. So it was really making sure that the children were getting the same across the board mm-hmm. in those grade levels and making sure they were really prepared and ready to go into high school. Mm-hmm. You know, this is, you know, and being able to offer those classes that children deserve to have right from the beginning and making sure that everyone was getting what they needed. So
And it sounded like this year the budgeting process focused a lot more on equity also, right? The sort of breaking the mold of what had traditionally been done. Well, we have X number of teachers in this school, and that's what we have to continue, even though we may only have 10 or 12 or whatever, 13 students in those sections.
Right.
Whereas other schools, well, we got the same number of teachers, but we got 22 or 25 kids in those sections. Why is that equitable, right? And it seemed like there was a lot of conversation about that.
Yeah, I think that we're really trying to, again, take a deeper look at those issues and make sure that we are being equitable across all the schools, making sure that they all get the funding that they need to provide the programming that these children deserve, and, you know, making sure that we're meeting families' needs as well. You know, school has become a place where it is a community on its own. And it's also a place where families go to seek information and also to, you know, feel supported. And so I think that, you know, continuing that is a wonderful thing into the middle and high schools.
What were some of the downsides that the committee considered when it came to doing the new middle school reorganization? Was there something where they said, well, you know, that's going to be hard, but we can overcome it? What were some of those?
I think the biggest thing that we thought about was we really need to talk to the educators. We really need to speak to the students. You know, we want to hear those voices in the decisions that we're making, and also the families. But I think the students and the educators who are going to be there every day experiencing these things, we really wanted to hear from them about, you know, what they thought about these ideas. Would make their jobs easier? And for children, what kind of education do you really want and, you know, to go to every day?
Were there concerns that, you know, you're basically peeling off the fifth graders from the elementary schools? And I know, you know, when you have kids and they're you know, they seem so young at the time, but they're growing every single year and they're getting more and more mature. So do some of the parents just want to keep them young for that one more year and keep them in their elementary school in fifth grade and not want to let them go to the big school?
I think that we have to think about this in a way that schools across the country are structured in different ways. You know, there are a lot of elementary schools actually just in Berkshire County that go up to sixth grade, simply because the 7, 8 are in the middle
or sometimes
school,
in, or high
in
school,
the high school.
Right?
So So you know, so I think that we have to really not look at the structure of that so much as understanding who the students are at that time in their lives and in their development, and what their needs are. And so I think that was what we were really doing. We were looking at what were their developmental needs at that moment in their lives and how could we structure something that felt supportive for them and safe for them. And so I think that's, you know, I believe that that's really what we did.
Were there other models around the state that you looked at, some other communities that were doing this already? I mean, obviously, as you said, everybody, every different school district has a different way of doing it based on, you know, what their philosophy is, what the buildings that they have are, right? They work through those things. Were there a couple that stood out that you said, oh, okay, they're doing well there, and that could work in Pittsfield?
Yeah, we really did a lot of research. You know, we were broken into subgroups, so there were people that focused on that specific area. Then there were people that focused on classroom sizes and surveys to families, and you know, so we were structured in that way. So I was part of the group that researched education in different areas, not only in our own state but other states in the country, just to see what works, what doesn't work, what kinds of educational models should we be looking at. So I think that to us, we really focused in on Holyoke and Springfield and areas that had a similar structure to ours or a similar amount of people in the area and, you know, the socioeconomic obvious ways to look at things as well. So we really focused on those schools to see, you know, what were they doing, what worked well for them, and when they did a restructure, how did it go?
Because it's hard to compare Pittsfield to, let's say, even in other schools in Berkshire County, because we're a very different community, a bigger city, very different demographics in a lot of ways, right? So it's hard to make that comparison and say, well, we'd like to be more like whatever this district and the results and things. So you really have to go out to other communities and say, well, there, you know, Westfield is similar to Pittsfield, or, you know, something like a Lowell or whatever. And you look at that and you say, okay, we can draw some clues from that and say that works here and this doesn't work here, and bring those things.
You know, it's one of those things where you don't want to try to reinvent the wheel, right? So we did definitely look across the state of Massachusetts to see what works in different areas and really compare ourselves to those places that matched what we really looked like.
And these are decisions, obviously, that were made across two administrations for the public schools, two different superintendents, and then also between two really different school committees also from different elected officials. So some decisions were made in the previous school committee, and then they kind of handed them off to you and your compatriots this year, right?
Yes.
And so what was that like when you knew that you could still, if you needed to, put on the brakes and say, okay, this isn't going to work? That those were decisions that you could come in and look at with a fresh face and say, yes, it will work, or no, it won't work.
Yeah, I think for me, it was really helpful that I had been through the process with those folks, right? So so I had a good sense of what I thought would be manageable. And so I knew early on that if we didn't have the educator buy-in, that we shouldn't move forward.
Right, and that was going to be a big hurdle, right?
That was going to be a big hurdle.
And that has to go through a union, too, which is another...
Absolutely.
Really,
exactly.
Right?
Yep,
absolutely. That's a complication, but you can't just say, okay, we're going to do this without having the agreement of all the parties involved.
That's it. Exactly. Yeah. And also, you know, we did have to tweak, obviously, timing of, you know, busing. We had to tweak timing of start and end times for school. And that really impacts educators. And, you know... It's funny, we talk about the myth for preschool age children who, when they come to the school, you know, they do really think, some of them think that the teachers live there, you know,
and so they don't. Oh, okay.
I'm going to break that myth. We don't live at school. And so, you know, those educators have families. So we had to really consider that as well. You know, we were looking at childcare. You know, what educators need childcare, and how can we make sure that that's managed well for them as, you know, as part of this?
Because, so many details.
It really, the minutia of all of it, you know, is just, it's really important to look at everything.
Yeah. And seemingly a very short period of time to get it done, which is, you know, pretty amazing that it is being accomplished in that amount of time. So kudos to the people that are doing the work on the ground to make that happen.
Absolutely.
And I think about the transportation, especially knowing that, you know, several different sort of scenarios had to be built and run and said, does this work? Does this not work? I mean, that's real life stuff. That's you know, rubber to the road, literally, knowing that you can get kids from around the city to their schools.
Yeah. I mean, that was a major piece of it. And I have to, you know, say that they did an amazing job. The amount of time and effort that was put into that to be able to accomplish what we did has been amazing. You know, it's so different for someone to say, okay, well, this is what I need. Now go forward and make it happen.
Yeah.
Right. So it's all the people that end up having to go forward and make it happen. You know, I can sit there all I want and say, this is what I think we need.
Yeah.
But if we can't make all those other pieces come together to work together, we won't be able to accomplish it. So I'm really appreciative of all of the work that went into this by so many people.
Sarah Mule is my guest here this morning, a member of the Pittsfield School Committee. If you're just joining us on Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR FM, and we're talking about the middle school restructuring here in Pittsfield, moving all of the fifth and sixth graders to Herberg Middle School, which I don't know if it'll still be called Herberg Middle School. We'll find out. And then the seventh and eighth graders going to the Reed campus starting in September. And just the last thought on all of that, what types of things will you be looking for as a school committee member to measure to see that this is working out the way that you wanted it to? Are you going to be looking for some outcomes, some performance metrics? Is it going to be more of a perception thing where you know that more and more families are not choicing their kids out of the district around fourth, fifth, sixth grade? Is that going to be something that can be measured?
I think, you know, it's... I am not the best at data analysis, so thank goodness we have a lot of people that do that for us. So I will say that we will be looking at the data. You know, we're going to look at, you know, that we're, again, we're listening for the voices of the students, of the families, and of the educators that are in those buildings and the administrators in those buildings. You know, we really want to know what's happening and how things are going. We want to be as supportive as possible. You know, we talked about, we want to come in and we want to paint rooms and we want to move boxes. And we, you know, we want to help as much as we can to make sure that the educators feel supported in this endeavor. And also that the students feel excited and happy to be going into this new idea of the schools. So
I'm sure it will be a very exciting thing, and kids, as much as they'll go through summer and try not to think about school, I'm sure that there'll be something about that will be on their mind when they're entering either fifth or sixth grade.
Yes.
From their existing elementary schools this coming
year.
Well,
we do have programs for any families that are worried about their children and their transitions. Please reach out to your building principal, because they will have information about programming in the summer that their children can go to before school starts to help them really with that transition.
So it's
really important that we provide that for families. And I thank those educators and administrators that will be there in the summertime for those kids and really help them feel at ease about any worries that they might have about school.
Yeah. And of course, this year also with the fifth and sixth graders heading to Herberg, one fewer elementary school will remain in September, and that's Morningside School. And that, I'm sure, was a wrenching decision for this school committee. That's something that the previous school committee didn't take on, at least directly. I'm sure, again, it's been talked about, you know, the three oldest schools, Morningside, Conti, and Crosby. The former two, at least, are being discussed right now, and we'll talk about that more in the second half of the show with that building
you're
project.
You're already making me tear up. So.
Oh, I know. So you didn't go to Morningside School.
Did.
You did go to Morningside School. So,
yes.
Okay. So what were your impressions of being a student then at Morningside School? What do you remember about it?
I remember a lot of noise.
Noise.
I remember it was very hard for me to concentrate. It was, I had a lot of fun as far as friends, and I had some really great teachers.
I mean, that's the key, right?
It's
about the teachers, and it's about the community that's part of a school.
Definitely.
But you can't ignore the idea that it is a kind of a flawed building. It was a flawed concept.
Unfortunately.
They stopped the idea of the open classroom concept pretty much right after they started building these things, right? It was in the 70s.
Oh,
it was
gosh.
A very short period of time.
Yeah.
I went to a high school that had an open class concept.
Oh my gosh, in high school.
Drury High School was built that way in 1976.
I
went to
that.
It right after it was built. It was a brand new school, but nobody liked it for that reason, right?
Yeah.
And they started trying to build walls, and it didn't work out because then they made it a sick building. You know, it was all these things that you just can't do with those buildings. So
exactly.
But there we were. So now we've got two of those buildings still in operation, one of them, you know, coming to a close in a couple of days here.
Yes.
So how do you feel about sort of where those students and families will be heading in that sort of redistricting plan for Morningside School?
So again, this is one of those things where it's like, you know, this is the decision I made. Now go forth and do the things, right?
Yeah.
So again, we are tasking other people to now take care of this, and they have done a phenomenal job. You know, everyone has made sure they've gone to visit the children that are coming to their schools. You know, we've had nights for families to be able to go and see the spaces their children will go to.
Nice.
We've provided transportation for families from the Morningside District to get to those places. You know, we really we really wanted to make sure that families felt supported in this change. And so I hope that we did a good job. For all the things that I know we did, I hope that families feel like we did a good job with it. So, you know, that's the most important part, is making sure those families feel supported in this change. Yeah. And the educators that are welcoming those children into their classrooms.
Yeah.
That's a huge, huge thing for this district to take up. And I think that we're doing it pretty well. You know, there might be some stumbling happening, but I think for the most part, we're doing a really amazing job.
I'm sure it was a hard decision one way or the other, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you can sort of put two different sides of your brain to it and say, well, objectively, the facts are there. And you say that we have, you know, 8 elementary schools and we don't have the population that we once did 40 years ago when 8 elementary schools were still in place.
Yeah.
We look forward to the projections and we say we're not going to have any kind of influx of huge number of kids that are going to fill these seats in these schools.
Right.
So there is an economic issue there. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's, you know, again, left brain kind of stuff, right?
Yeah.
That you have to make those decisions based on that and based on the overall health of the school community. And then, you know, there's the right brain stuff, which is, but it's great to have the school there and it's a community and people, you know, pull together, and services that the students receive there must have been, you know, tugging also.
Yeah, but I think...
Will the services then follow the students?
The services will all follow the students, which is amazing.
Yeah.
You know, we made sure that that happened, especially, you know, when they looked at the budget and said, you know, we can manage to make this work so that those students are followed by the services that they really need.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that was truly amazing, and that, you know, they took up that endeavor and really made sure that that was going to work for the district. Yeah. And so I think that, you know, that's, again, that all the small pieces that go into this larger picture.
Yeah.
It's like putting together a puzzle for sure. But I think that, you know, we looked at it and we made sure that it was going to work.
Yeah.
I don't think that I would want to move forward if, you know, knowing that it wasn't going to work.
Sure.
So,
and I can imagine too, that this decision, if it wasn't going to happen this year, which this was the year when the middle schools are reorganizing, when you're distributing the fifth graders back into one school. And so you're going to have even fewer seats in some of these elementary schools. And that particular school building was in need of work. It was either going to need millions of dollars of work to continue keeping it as a school, or it was going to need to be closed. So it was a matter of, are you going to do it this year? Or if you don't, it's going to be next year or maybe the year after. You have to make that decision at some point.
Yeah, I think, you know, Dr. Phillips made that very clear, that it's not a matter of if we do it, it's when we do it. And so I think that we needed to really, you know, make sure that we took care of it. And I think that, you know, it was a hard decision. It was definitely one of those things where it's like, well, we're already doing all these other things.
Why
don't we throw something else in there? And, you know, and I do take responsibility. I was the one that made a mention about it in the school committee meeting. And it just started.
It was clearly on people's minds, though, right? But you were the first one to really bring it up and say, you're going to have to close a school somewhere.
I think that, you know, looking at the budget and knowing that we were losing educators.
Yeah.
Felt bad to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, what can we look at doing?
Right. And that was a growing crisis at that moment of the budget, of knowing that, you know, you're $4 million underwater through no fault of the school committee. This is the hand that you're dealt.
Exactly.
Right. What do you do with that hand?
Right.
And, you know, the first proposals were, you're going to lose a lot of teachers at PHS. Mm-hmm. I remember that was one of the big conversations immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And that was not going to be acceptable, you know, especially now with PHS kind of on the rebound. So that would help at least with that process and with other teaching positions around the district.
Yeah. So for me, it was really, let's look at this in a way, in a business way. I tried very hard to keep my emotions away from it. You know, being that it was my school, you know, and my siblings. I have 3 siblings. They all went to Morningside.
Wow.
So, you know, my older sister and I went to Crane. So we made a transition. Wow. In
which one was Crane? Remind me. I don't.
Crane was on Springside Avenue.
Oh, okay.
All the way at the top. It's now Dartmouth Apartments, I think.
Okay. Yeah.
So yeah, it's an apartment building now, but if that was my school, I walked there in kindergarten. So I went there for kindergarten and then moved to Morningside.
Okay.
For first grade, they closed Crane.
Yeah.
So.
And that was when I think they had like 18 or 20 different neighborhood schools, right? Something like that around the city in the 60s and 70s.
I mean, I was in kindergarten.
Right.
I'm sure.
I went to some pretty old schools too.
Absolutely.
And I remember some of those buildings. They were definitely not up to today's standards in any way.
No. Yeah. And I have to say, you know, my first instinct about Morningside was, oh yeah, it's an easy thing, right? Mm. Let's close this school because it doesn't work.
Mm.
We have the data. We have so many years of data that proves that, you know, students struggled with this open classroom concept, including myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, it was like a no-brainer. But then it was, you know, you do have to think about how is this going to affect the students? How is this going to affect the families?
Yeah.
A lot of stories there. And again, you know, it's multi-generational too,
mm-hmm,
right? Like we've listened to families who were there as students, who had their children there as students, who now have grandchildren there as students.
Mm-hmm.
I'm one of the first generations that went to that school. Mm. So, I'm 51 years old, so it's, you know, that's a long time ago. So
I feel your pain.
Yeah. So, you know, but it is important to know that, you know, this is a multi-generational way of looking at things.
Sometimes I think the adults have a harder time with it than the kids. The kids will figure it out, right?
I will tell you that is absolutely true.
Yeah.
So, you know, being an educator and seeing children go through transitions, having worked in programs where, you know, children had a lot of trauma in their lives and, you know, issues. I think that I have seen children be resilient throughout
they can do
much
it.
Harder things.
Yeah. Sarah Mule is my guest here this morning. We're actually reaching that top of the hour break that we've got to take.
Okay.
So we're on radio. We got to do that. The FCC will come down on us if we don't do it. We'll do that, and we'll come back for part two of our interview with Sarah Mule, school committee member here in the city of Pittsfield, on Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR-FM. You're tuned to Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR-FM Pittsfield, and 88.1 WSBR Lee.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
And from UCP of Western Massachusetts, the Northern Berkshire Early Intervention Program is now accepting applications for an occupational therapist to support child development, empower families, and change futures. 2026 graduates welcome to apply. Apply today at ucpwma.org.
Still paying for that monthly gym membership? How about that streaming service you never watch? Why not support WTBR-FM instead? For just $8.97 a month, you could show your support for our community radio station today. Go to WTBRFM.com and click donate. It's as easy as that. We need to support this station to keep it on the air, and every little bit helps. WTBR-FM, for the love of radio.
What would it be like not having PCTV's reliable coverage of our Pittsfield City meetings? Well, the answer is it would be like driving in the darkness without headlights. We need the light to show us exactly what's coming our way. PCTV's coverage is that light. It's so reliable and dependable, we don't even think about not having it, but nothing can be taken for granted. Support this building block of democracy today. It's too important to lose, especially now. Pittsfield Community Television, see it all, decide for yourself.
Hey, water lovers, this is Leslie Gabriel, your water ambassador, host of And So It Flows. Our water music and water culture brings water outside the cup. Moisten your ears every Tuesday at 2 p.m. here at WTBR 89.7 FM. Love your water.
In the abundance of water, the fool will get thirsty.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. Free community college for any Massachusetts resident without a bachelor's degree at BCC. Find out more at berkshirecc.edu. And from Santrini Awnings and Home Improvement, providing awnings and canopies in Western Massachusetts. Retractable awnings, retractable screen, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings and screen rooms. Customized solutions available online at Sandrini.com.
Radio for people who used to love radio. Welcome back, WTBR.
And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
All right, welcome back to Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. Sean Sayre here with you this morning. On the 18th of June, a Thursday morning, we're waking up to a little wetness out there, little showers. We're going to get some thunderstorms and some wind a little later, I hear. So prepare for that. We'll be back to our conversation with Sarah Mule in just a moment after we do the weather forecast. And just to let you know, the Pittsfield 4th of July Parade will be celebrating the generations this year, and Pittsfield Community TV is bringing you live coverage. You can join PCTV on July 4th, beginning at 9:30 a.m. for live parade coverage from South Street in Pittsfield on PCTV Access Pittsfield Channel 1301, PCTV Select 1, and on the Pittsfield Community Television Facebook page. Live coverage of the 4th of July Parade is supported by Greylock Federal Credit Union. And also thanks to the Berkshire Community College, Access Plus, and KJ Nosh Catering. Thank you to all of the great underwriters and supporters we have of the broadcast coverage of the 4th of July Parade. Any means, the biggest thing that we do here at PCTV every year. It's a really, really big deal. and, of course, we're all looking forward to the parade this year. All right, let's do the weather forecast and come right back with our interview with Sarah. Here we go.
And now back to the Morning Drive.
Of course, I could play the right clip. Here we go.
Berkshire weather.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Rest of tonight, cloudy with a 40% chance of showers. Night is cool. Near steady temperature around 60. South wind 5 to 10 miles per hour with gusts up to 30 miles per hour. Thursday, showers in the morning, then showers likely with a chance of thunderstorms in the afternoon. Some thunderstorms may be severe with damaging wind in the afternoon. Highs in the upper 70s. South wind 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts up to 45 miles per hour. Chance of rain near 100%. Thursday night, partly cloudy. A chance of showers in the evening. Lows in the mid 50s. West wind 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts up to 35 miles per hour. Chance of rain 50%. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
Well, you know it's a long forecast when we run out of weather music. We've got more weather than we have music. That's the way it goes. All right.
Just secure all the pillows on
yes,
the porch, right?
Definitely. Yeah, you want to put those umbrellas away.
Exactly.
Anything that could become a projectile.
Yes.
If you know you're going to get some damaging winds, let's not add to it, you know.
That's right.
Yeah, definitely. Sarah Mule, thanks again for being here today, talking to us about school stuff.
Yes.
And so we were just talking about Morningside School. Of course, on the other side of the city, we have Conti and Crosby, and there's a big building project planned and in process, really, right
yes.
now. The state
yeah.
has pretty much agreed that they will pay a big chunk of that for Pittsfield to reinvest in our elementary schools. That will be replacing Crosby Elementary School, which, again, was built in the early 60s as a junior high school, right? As a,
yes.
like a 7, 8, and 9 school. At some point, it was converted to an elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the materials, obviously, that were used in that school need to be abated in order to take the school down, which means, as we've seen, that you can't actually fix things that you need to fix in the school without some major, you know, renovation project, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so that was really the impetus to, okay, we've got to have some new investment on that campus.
Absolutely. You know, I remember when I was at Reed Middle School, they were removing asbestos. So,
yeah.
You know, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
And so I think that's knowing that you can't replace a window at
without anything other than
Crosby,
duct tape, right?
Without a piece of plywood,
yeah.
I think is really scary,
yeah.
You know? So
And as BCC found when they did their big envelope project, which was a few years ago, a lot of that was probably built around the same time with the same materials.
Yes.
You know, they found that it was in like the glue that was holding things together, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they put asbestos in everything.
Yeah.
And
it's
so you can't just plain old, okay, somebody needs to go in there and fix it. Can't do that.
No. Yeah. And, you know, it's in some siding on houses. Mm-hmm. And it's a major issue. Yeah. So, you know, we definitely want to rectify that, and we're excited about the project. It is down the road a ways, but we...
Sounds like the timeline shifted a little bit on that, too, because when the School Building Needs Commission was originally talking about it, they were thinking that... I was hearing some 2028 numbers, 2029 numbers of completion of actually opening the school, and now we're hearing some new numbers from the builders saying, well, maybe not until 2031 or 2032. Is that the new timeline?
We are hoping, you know, it's not solidified at the moment that I can recall, but I know that they have pushed it back a little bit, and so we're hoping that they'll step it up a little bit and maybe get it done a little bit sooner than that. But it was hard to hear that it wasn't when we thought it would be.
Yeah.
So, but you know, but hopefully we can push it a little bit more forward.
And the idea behind that project is still that you're basically building two schools on one physical campus, right? And so they're going to share some facilities in between. They might share a lunchroom. They might share a gymnasium or some kind of facility in between. But there's going to be one school for the early kids, right? So maybe pre-K through first grade, which have different needs. And you can certainly speak to that. And then the second through the fourth graders would be in the other building. Is that still the way the concept's going to work?
You know, I think that's what we would like to see.
Yeah.
You know, there's different scenarios that we have discussed regarding that. And so I think that, you know, we haven't come to a final decision at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But it would be an interesting concept to do it that way, to separate it that way.
Mm-hmm.
There are campuses across Massachusetts where they have an early childhood wing or separate building on the same campus as the elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that would be a really wonderful idea and a great transition for children and families.
Because then they don't have to travel to a different building.
Right.
It's just a different part of the same building that you go to every
day.
Yes,
or just across the parking lot, you know, or the campus. So I think it's a great concept for sure. I think we have the space to do it on. So why not take advantage of that? So I'm hopeful that that's the way it goes. And we'll see, you know, when we get to that stage of choosing, you know, architectural plans that we get to choose from, we'll hope that that's one of those plans that it's laid out.
Yeah.
So.
And so currently the phase that it's in is a planning phase where basically they're deciding to, you know, to see what kind of funding is going to take to move this forward, and then that funding has to be approved by the city council. I think that's like the next step, but that's still not for several months,
right?
I think, right?
Right, yeah. It's not on the table at the moment.
Yeah.
So,
and then, of course, the idea is to combine the students at Conte Community School, which is basically right around the corner, similar, close, very close to the same neighborhood as Crosby.
Yeah.
And then potentially there's some talk about the Stearns building also being involved there, but that hasn't also been decided, right?
That has not been decided at this moment. You know, I think that's going to take a lot more conversation.
Yeah.
And obviously right now Stearns is our specialty. You know, we're doing some really great things there with special education. And so I think that, to lose that would be detrimental to the community. So I think that we'll try to keep it out of that project, but it wasn't in the original conversation. But because it is supposedly in that district, within that same district of the city, I think that is that's why they had to bring that into the conversation.
Yeah.
So I'm hopeful that it won't change, but, you know, we'll see when we get further down the road.
Yeah. What are some of the special needs of, let's say, the early students, the pre-K, the kindergarten, the first grade? Why do you have to build sort of different classrooms and buildings and facilities that serve them specifically versus some older elementary school students? What do they need that's different?
Yeah, well, I think logistically speaking, you know, they're smaller people, so so they definitely need specialty, you know, the furniture and the equipment that we need to use on the playground even has to be a different size.
Aren't they required to have, like, sinks and bathrooms and things like that in certain classrooms?
Yeah, and so younger age levels, it's definitely helpful to have bathrooms in the classrooms. And not send a four-year-old out into a hallway to go use the bathroom.
Yeah.
You know, there are programs that, you know, they take an entire class down the hall to use the bathroom. They line up against the wall maybe and wait, you know, and teachers kind of have them going in and out. And so that can be really difficult and disruptive. And so if you have a bathroom in your classroom, it makes it a lot easier. And, you know, it's not, you're not breaking into that instructional time to be able to do that. So so that's imperative for sure.
Yeah.
And then, you know, as far as curriculum goes, it's a very different, you know, we want to really focus. I know that they're trying to, you know, everyone says that that preschool is the new kindergarten, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, they're, you know, trying to get them more structured and ready for school.
Because there was a time even when kindergarten was optional, right? I mean, long time ago, but still.
It is still in the state of Massachusetts.
Is it really?
Yes.
No kidding. I can't imagine families not sending their kids to kindergarten.
Yeah, no. And I think that most, and I don't really know of any families that don't send their children to kindergarten at this point. I'm sure there's a handful of people that may not choose to do that. But most children go to kindergarten before they head off, you know, before they get into the older grades. It's really an important step, actually, for children to go to kindergarten. I think that, you know, especially if they've been home and they haven't had a preschool experience, really they need to be able to have those experiences to understand how a classroom works, to understand expectations of teachers, things like that. But I really want to see those younger grades be less structured. You know, I want them to still be playing and really getting to know each other.
They're learning when they're playing too, right?
Yeah, they're absolutely. Yeah. Everything is a learning opportunity with children. So I think that, you know, we really need to take hold of that idea and, you know, give them a little bit less structure and an ability to really play and learn from each other. And, you know, it's really also learning those key concepts about conflict resolution and how to develop relationships with people and, you know, just being in a community setting with others and understanding how to wait your turn and be patient. And
I know some adults that could use some of that.
Absolutely. No, for sure. For sure. And that, and I think that that's a big deal. And then leading into that is, you know, as they get older, if they've built those relationships with their peers, they understand feelings, they understand their impact on other people. I think that's really important because, you know, social media has been such a detriment to us when it comes to, you know, when it comes to bullying.
Yeah.
And feelings and, you know,
it's like a super highway for bullying.
Absolutely. You know, if I, you know, cause I'm looking at you right in your eye. If, you know, I said to you, oh, Sean Sayre is a terrible radio host.
Wait, somebody's going to clip that now.
This show is awful, you know, but I'm looking at you and I see like your face was like, oh man, why would you want to say something like that about me right here on the air? And so I know that I'm impacting you in a, you know, in a negative way. And so then I'm going to say, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to hurt your feelings. That wasn't really nice of me to say. Yeah. But if I go online and I'm typing that, and I can't see your face.
And there's no consequences.
Exactly.
Right?
Then maybe I don't care how it made you feel.
Yeah.
Even if you type back to me online saying, geez, Sarah, that was really awful. Why did you say something like that? I can ignore it.
Mm-hmm. Or you could double down, right?
Right. Which and is then what there a lot are people other do. People yeah. who are jumping in yeah. on my conversation about yeah. it, right? Because I've now let this opinion out into the world. And those people are jumping on board saying, oh, yeah, I agree. He's mm-hmm. terrible, right? So now all these people are making assumptions about you that aren't true yeah. because I've now said something negative about you and all these other people are jumping on board to agree with me, even if they have never met you.
Yeah.
Right.
It's definitely a coward's paradise.
It is.
I don't know how
it
else
really
I can
is.
Call it.
It really is. And that's been a difficult part of being on the school committee.
Yeah, I'll bet. What do you think of now that we're on social media? What do you think of the UK's decision to limit social media to, be 15 and under? So you have to be 16 mm-hmm. in order to have social media. What do you think of that? Would that ever fly in the US?
I think it's amazing. Yeah. The state of Massachusetts is looking at that right now.
Yeah. Do you think that would actually happen? Do you think because policy always lags technology.
It's really difficult to say, especially right now in the current political climate. Mm. So I can't say if that would work or not. I'm hopeful that we come to that. I think that we haven't come to that quick enough.
Yeah.
Right. We see the damage that it does to people, especially to young children.
Yeah.
You know, we've had many youth take their own lives mm-hmm. because of bullying online. It is horrifying to think about.
Yeah.
And I think that we really need to be looking at it a lot closer than we mm-hmm. do currently.
Yeah. It's a lot of pressure on parents, too, though, because, you know, because of the peer pressure and because mm-hmm. all the other kids have it. And
you
don't want your kid to be the only one who doesn't, you know, fit in or go along and things. There's so much pressure.
It is. However... You know, it's like you're the one that's in control as the parent.
Right.
As far as what your child has. Right. You know, if I want my child to be healthy and thriving, I'm not going to go to the grocery store and buy a bunch of junk food for the house.
Right.
Right? Like, or I'm going to buy some of those things, but I'm going to limit it maybe mm-hmm. when, you know, how much at a time or whatever. And it's the same with cell phones. Mm. You know, I was the unpopular parent who didn't give their child a phone until they were 13.
Yeah.
So, but I think that he's much better for it, mm-hmm. you know, and I saw what it did to my older children and made that decision. Mm. And even getting pressure from my older kids about it for my younger son, you know, them saying like, Mom, come on, like, what are you doing to this poor kid? I'm like, well, he has an iPad at home, access to an iPad. He mm-hmm. has access to a computer.
Mm-hmm.
He can talk to his friends. You know,
yep.
he can use my phone. He had a flip phone. Mm. That was his first phone. And he was really upset yeah. about it. However, he used it. It was a way that he could communicate with people.
Right.
It wasn't his favorite thing, but it was, you know, that was what we did yeah. at the time. So,
and I heard someone the other day I was just talking to, and he was saying, you know, with bullying and with online, it used to be that the kids would leave school if they were getting bullied at school or whatever. They get on the bus, they go home, and then get away from it, right?
Yeah.
They don't have to be
yeah.
bullied, you know,
exactly.
at home.
Right.
And then they can go back and they can deal with it the next day. It's not easy, mm-hmm. you know,
yep.
but it was,
yep.
and now... With social media, there's no respite from it whatsoever.
Yeah.
It's with them all the time.
Absolutely.
And in fact, the bullying might actually intensify
mm-hmm.
when you get home. So you're
For
dealing
sure.
with it at school.
For sure.
You're dealing with it at home. It never goes away.
Yeah,
and that's
yeah.
that's the kind of pressure I think the kids are under right now.
Absolutely. Well, and then, you know, you have kids who are being threatened online.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're threatening other people, you know, so yeah. it just,
and it's hard to watch all that stuff too. Like
yeah.
who's managing that?
Nobody.
Right.
Really, you know, and hopefully the kids feel they have a good enough relationship with someone mm-hmm. in their lives. You know, hopefully they'll have someone they can go to say, hey, this is happening to me.
Yeah.
And I don't know what to do about it,
yep.
you know, and I think that that's the other thing that parents really, the responsibility, if you're going to give your kid a phone, make sure you talk about those things mm-hmm. with them. What kinds of things they can come up against
right.
and, you know, make sure you're assuring them that they are a safe person to come to talk to about those things where they, even if it's just they don't want them to do anything about it, you know, because that's another thing, you know. Kids don't want their parents to help them, you know, take care of things.
True.
But it's at least they know they can come and talk to you about it and know that you're a safe person, that they can say, this is really bothering me and I don't know what to do.
Well, and a lot of this is generational too, right? The iPhone was only introduced in 2007. So there's really only one generation now. The parents of these kids are just coming into it, did not experience that same level of technology that the kids are faced with. Mm-hmm. Social media wasn't a thing, as far as I know, until about 2008. So, suddenly it's like, well, the adults face it one way, but the kids face it something different. And that's, I'm sure, very difficult to figure out. Yeah. Sarah Mule, my guest here this morning, if you're just tuning in, a few minutes left here of the program on Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR FM. An early educator by trade. What do you think of universal pre-K? Is that something that we'll see soon? Is that a good thing for sort of a mandate for all school districts to have to provide? Could that happen? And what does that also do to private preschool providers, right? That's that's an industry that we have to support.
For sure. So universal pre-K is already here. It's been here actually for a while. We have implemented preschool programs in all of our elementary schools. And we also have providers that offer preschool in our public schools. So that's another thing that we've had preschool in our public schools, even if they weren't associated with the public school itself. So that's actually been a wonderful thing.
So it's accessible to everyone at this point.
Yes. Yeah, it should be. Well, not to everyone, because there is a lottery and, because you have so many families that would like a spot in the preschool program. So I think if we want to offer it wider, that's where we're looking at these newer buildings that we want to think about.
Because our buildings currently weren't built with the concept of providing that care.
Exactly. Right? Exactly.
I seem to remember it being called nursery school.
Yes.
When I was a kid, right? So before it was called preschool.
Yes.
And I'm sure there was an educational element to it back then too, but it also was kind of a preparatory type of a thing, right?
It absolutely is. Yeah. You know, and there are some schools in the in Berkshire County who offer early K and pre-K, and there is a difference. The early K is more preparing children for the rigor of kindergarten. So there's and it did affect programs across Berkshire County when preschool went into effect. You know, when the public schools decided they're definitely going to take this on. But there's also a grant called the CPPI grant, where the public schools are managing the preschool programs, but they are going to help families get care where they want care in the Berkshire. So if you want to stay in your preschool program at a private preschool or even, you know, a nonprofit preschool that your children go to, if they are part of the CPPI program, that they will help manage that with you and help with materials and costs and things like that. And so I think that's a really positive way that the state looked at it to say, well, we don't have enough space for all the children in the public schools as much as we would like to have that space. But we didn't build the public schools to provide space for that.
Right.
but families want free preschool. Mm-hmm. And so how can we manage that and deliver that to families across the state? And so this is one of the ways that they're managing that. They're providing grants to help programs also provide that pre-K experience and the materials that they would have in the public school. So that's a really positive thing.
Still not completely equitable, because there's still people, I guess, being left out who want to be able to have that for their kids, right?
Right. But there are programs in the city of Pittsfield who are part of the CPPI programming where you could possibly get free preschool. So, I would definitely encourage families to reach out to all the different programs, reach out to Pittsfield Public Schools to find out more about the pre-K programming and what we can offer for their family. And if we don't have space available, what resources can we offer them for different places they can go?
Any final thoughts in the last minute that we've got here as far as the end of the school year, beginning of next school year, some well wishes for people for a good summer?
Oh, I mean, I wish all the children and families a wonderful summer. It's, you know, hopefully they'll have some time to spend together, you know, and all those summer programs out there, have a great time. Be safe. Absolutely make sure that everyone that's in your program is thoroughly vetted and made aware of all of your program policies and procedures, and, you know, make sure that they're going to have a good time.
Got to keep kids safe, right?
For sure.
Yeah, number one. Safety number one, not number three.
No, it's number one, actually. Yeah,
yeah,
for sure.
Sarah Mule, thanks for coming in, talking to me today. Great conversation.
Absolutely.
We appreciate it.
Love
we'll have
to
you
do
back.
It again.
Yeah, we'll do it as the new school year starts somewhere around there.
Definitely.
And see how we're doing.
Okay,
all right.
We'll take care. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And we'll see you. Actually, we will not see you live tomorrow, everybody. That is Juneteenth tomorrow. So we are off, and we'll be back again with Brian on Monday on Morning Drive. Take care and have a great weekend, everybody.
Great. Thank you.